As we get ready for the game of the century, part two, college basketball gets underway. The SEC will find out what kind of league it is and where Will Wade and the Tigers fit into it. Hell yeah, we'll talk about LSU and Bama for sure. How LSU has made up the ground in recruiting. We'll also go behind enemy lines to the Tuscaloosa News to find out if they know how healthy Tua is. Plus, Mr. College Football weighs in on the Tigers and the Tide. Lots to talk about. Let's get busy. Today, it is Tuesday, November the 5th, 2019.
Prescott in the gun from the 42 of the Giants, gets the snap, drops back, moves up, crumbling pocket, he runs to the near side, he points and throws as he runs, it's caught on the near side by Jarwin, the tight end 30, down the near sideline, the 20, got a block at the 15, breaks a tackle 10, down the sideline 5, he's in for the touchdown! Shotgun snap, here's a three-man rush. He winds up and he throws a line drive down the middle. It's caught in stride, 25 to the 20, down to the 15, coming to the near side. Cooper to the 5, to the pylon, touchdown Dallas. What a throw, but what a run after the catch by Amari Cooper. 45-yard touchdown. Dallas scores to extend their lead midway through the fourth quarter.
Allen got the rebound, finds Harris in the corner. A three is short, but Allen slams home the rebound with two hands. 123-119. Nets go up by four with 4:12 left.
And good afternoon. How are you, Acadiana? And wherever you may be listening around the world, you dial this up. This is the Jordy Helfberg Show. On a Tuesday, November the 5th, we're here on 103.7 The Game, also 103.7thegame.com. Dallas racked up week number 9 of the NFL with a 37-18 win over the helpless, hapless New York football Giants. There'll be two new coaches in Gotham City because they're going to get rid of Gaze at with the Jets, and they're going to get rid of the coach of the New York Giants sooner rather than later. But the big story of the game was Dallas won, but that MetLife black cat, it just came out and you saw the doom and the gloom and the despair of all Dallas Cowboy fans. And that black cat evaded officials and retreated under the seats. The Pelicans lose led again. They fell behind by as many as 20. They got it to 2. They just couldn't get it done. And on we go. College basketball begins in earnest tonight. Oh, what a double dip we have. Kansas versus Duke. Michigan State versus Kentucky. It's in Madison Square Garden, the tip-off classic. It doesn't get any better than that. Blake Lavelle will join us in hour number two. A very well-regarded, high-esteemed college basketball analyst. We welcome him to the show, and we'll talk all about college hoops. The Raging Cajuns get underway tonight against the Wolfpack of New Orleans, Loyola University. And so they'll tip it off. LSU begins their season on Friday against Bowling Green. Let me tell you what else we have coming up on the program in hour number two. After Hot Topics, we'll talk to Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, about all things LSU Bama. Yes, we'll begin the show in about 10 minutes, give or take a few. Mike Scarborough of TigerBait.com. Ed Orgeron said we've narrowed the gap. How have they done that on a recruiting level? And Ed Orgeron, with hiring of assistant coaches and coordinators, how that gap has narrowed as well as compared to Alabama. Brett Hudson works for the Tuscaloosa News. He covers the Crimson Tide on a daily basis. We'll go behind enemy lines with Brett as well at about 2:32 this afternoon. And then let the hatred begin. We'll shift to the NFL It's Saints-Falcons week, and the Dirty Birds are coming to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles will join us. So a very, very busy day planned for you and yours. Big story in the NFL. The Carolina Panthers have put Cam Newton on injured reserve with a nagging foot injury. His season is done, and a healthy Nick Foles will regain his starting position as the quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Gardner Minshew era is kind of been derailed and curtailed just a little bit. Alabama LSU, Saturday, 2:30, right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show at 12:30, the call of the game at 2:30. You can watch it on CBS. Turn down the sound, turn up your radio on 103.7 The Game. Everybody's talking about the offenses, and rightly so. They are both juggernauts. Great quarterback play, tremendous wide receivers. But don't sleep on either defense. See, I personally don't think this game's getting in the 40s. I think this game's going to be in the low 30s, which is a lot considering these two teams and the way they've played before. But Ed Orgeron, at his Monday weekly presser, talked about the Bama defense.
On defense, they're basically a 4-3. Only five returning starters, only giving up 15 points a game. Top defensive players, Jennings, Lewis, and Diggs. They're very good, very talented, play smart football.
They're young. They're not the same, but they're still pretty darn good. And I laugh about this, but it's true when you think about it. Think about this. For the past, I don't know, X amount of years, Nick Saban didn't have to do anything about preparing for this game. When Les Miles was the coach, you talk about a cookie cutter. It's going to be the same thing every time. They're going to try and run through a brick wall. There's going to be no creativity, no imagination, defensive-oriented, kicking game-oriented, run. Cookie cutter. Nick spent a lot of time in the old film room and meeting with his coaches and trying to figure out a way to harness this prolific LSU offense. He's got to work this. He's got to earn some of his many, many millions this week. Nick Saban made a trip to Natchitoches, Louisiana over the summer, and deservedly so, inducted into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. At his presser on Monday, that subject was broached. And here's Saban's comments on coming back to Louisiana.
Well, I think it's a tremendous honor for me to be recognized anywhere for any awards. But you know, I think when you get these awards, you have to really accept them on behalf of a lot of people who were involved in helping you have the success that you had. We had a great administration there. Mark Emmert was the president. We had, you know, Skip was a great athletic director. We had the tools that we needed. We had a lot of good players who developed very nicely, and we had really good coaches on the staff who did a great job. As you can see, some of those guys are now head coaches and doing very well in their own right.
And a well-deserved award, and he was very, very humbled by that. So much more to come on this this big, big, big ball game Saturday in Tuscaloosa. Meanwhile, Thursday, the Raging Cajuns get back on the field. And in Billy Napier's first season in Lafayette, the Cajuns finished 7-7, right? They had appearances in the Sun Belt title game and the Cure Bowl. In those seven losses, only once, according to odds makers, only once they lose to a team that they were favored against. That one team was Coastal Carolina. The Chanticleers got the best of the Cajuns in that September 28 contest, 30-28. Well, now here we are in 2019, and Billy Napier's squad is 6-2. They'll be favored in every game down the stretch, and they have a clear path to another Sun Belt West Divisional title. A lot of players to this day say that the culture shift started with that loss to Coastal Carolina. Here's Billy Napier's thoughts on his takeaways from last year's game.
Man, that feels like a long time ago. You know, we were very, that was very early in our tenure, you know. Heck, you know, I'm not sure we quite knew who we were at that point, if that makes sense. You know, we were figuring it out. We needed that last year, you know. I told you guys before Coach Hockey came to my office after that, said, you know what, Coach, we needed that to happen. And I didn't quite agree with him. But, you know, I think that it was a little bit, it challenged us a little bit from a, you know, character standpoint. I think it galvanized us a little bit because we found out a little bit about who we were, and I thought some of our players really stepped up at that point in time.
To their fire, and that helped them push to the rest of the season, and now it's payback time. Coastal Carolina, Thursday at Carolina, 6:30 p.m. You can watch the broadcast on ESPNU. Ed Orgeron says the Tigers have narrowed the gap. Well, the polls certainly say that. To be able to do that, you've got to hire really good coaches, and even more importantly, you've got to get great players, and you've got to develop them. That's what LSU's done, including their Heisman candidate at quarterback, Joe Burrow. Mike Scarborough of TigerBait.com will join me. We'll discuss those topics and more as LSU-Bama Week rolls on here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers, and it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back on this Tuesday, 17 minutes after the hour. Let's spend 10 good minutes with our good friend, the recruiting analyst, and much, much more that TigerBait.com offers. And that's our good friend, Mike Scarborough. Mike, I don't know about you, but seems like every time this game comes, it seems like it takes forever to get here. But when you look at this year's edition of LSU Alabama, your thoughts on this super showdown coming up in Tuscaloosa?
You know, I've spent the last 2 days talking to guys in Alabama, guys that I go back years with, doing radio shows there and using them for previews that we do. And when you start looking at each position on each team and trying to figure out, okay, who has an advantage where, mm-hmm. I mean, they're very similar. You look at Alabama and you think, okay, well, their defensive line isn't what you're used to seeing out of them. And, you know, how effective are they going to be against LSU's offensive front? I think Auburn's defensive line is the best LSU will have faced all year.
Right.
You know, Tua and Burrow are both fantastic, nation's best quarterbacks, both Heisman front runners. You know, both have defensive backfields that are top shelf, mm-hmm. Receiver groups that neither one would trade for the other.
Right.
So it's kind of like, you know, which defense is going to force the most punts, or which special teams is going to avoid
right.
the costly turnover? Who's going to lead in the turnover margin? And they like to pride themselves on their turnover margin right now and where they rank, but it's also been done against some suspect opponents.
Yeah, no question LSU's been tested far more and more so this season than Alabama has at this point in time. And everybody's one position, another one that's very similar. I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire for LSU, Najee Harris for Alabama. You know, I think both teams are going to try and run the football. I don't know if there's any question about that. So they are very evenly matched. But look, if LSU's offensive line, if we talk about winning the game in the trenches, Alabama's defensive front is not what we've seen in the past. They're very young. If LSU's offensive line can handle Florida and Auburn, they should be able to handle Alabama.
Yeah, you know, there's one matchup, though, where I think LSU has an advantage. And I don't know, and I'm sure Joe Brady and them recognize it, and you know, but they've got four freshmen starting on defense, two of them uh-huh. at the linebacker spot. One of them, Christian Harris, right here from U-High in Baton Rouge. And with the way Thaddeus Moss has been playing at tight end, boy, I sure would be looking to try and isolate Moss on their linebackers and Clyde Edwards-Helaire on their linebackers. There's the temptation of, you know, Jefferson and Jamar Chase and Marshall. But there's a mismatch there. And they don't have the tight end, the marquee tight end that they're used to having. So I think LSU's better at that spot. I think offensive line, I think both teams are wondering if their defensive line can get pressure on the other's offense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be very interesting. Yeah. You know, Saban had it pretty well mapped out yesterday where, you know, he's talking about how, you know, he was citing one situation. I think they go on third down. They're 80% of the time. They're empty backfield. I mean, both coaching staffs know the ins and outs of each one and have watched film backwards and forwards for a long time.
LSU's narrowed the gap talent-wise. I believe they've also narrowed the gap with their coaching staff. You know, Aranda, Brady, Ensminger, the job that Craig has done, you know, Corey Raymond and all those. I mean, LSU staff pretty good. I don't think that gap is near what it used to be.
Yeah, and it's also beyond that. The analysts in the building, you know, you've got a lot of analysts that you know,
good point.
They're doing a lot of video work and scouting and doing a lot of stuff beyond what the position coaches can do. I mean, so I think that's helped things and even things up. You know, the other part of it, too, is you know, we're talking about these defensive lines and not being as dominant and being able to get to the passer. Well, that's like that for everybody. You know, is it necessarily that the defensive linemen have regressed in quality over the years, or it's we all need to recalibrate because of what these offenses are doing and how quickly quarterbacks get rid of the ball? You know, you've got to get more creative in when you bring a blitz and you know, even against Auburn, what do they have, 3 sacks against Burrow? How many of those sacks were really because LSU blew a blocking assignment or it was, you know, or something along those lines?
Coverage sacks, you know what I mean? Those were, you know, they dropped 7 back and Joe just had to hold the ball a little bit longer. You're right. Mike Scarborough of Tiger Bait.
It's very difficult to sack a quarterback or get the kind of pressure that we were used to seeing a decade ago when you've got a quarterback in shotgun and he's getting rid of the ball on a quick slant.
Mike, when you analyze, we talked about offense, defense. I mean, special teams always become so prevalent in this thing. I love LSU's punter. Alabama's always had a helter-skelter relationship with their field goal kicker. LSU, maybe not as consistent as a year ago, but not too bad. Where do you see the advantage there?
Well, Brett Baird, who I talked to last night, he was giving me some statistics on their field goal kicker. I mean, I think, what is he had? He's had 9 misses in the last year and a half.
Yeah.
They said if it came down to, he said that the Alabama fan base would be holding their breath if it came down to Alabama winning a game with a or sending a game in overtime with a 36-yard field goal that had to be made. So, but, you know, LSU special teams has been top-notch under Greg McMahon, but that against the Auburn game, it was not good. But in the ways that it wasn't good, it was all just, you know, lack of focus, making poor decisions, you know, stuff that can be corrected.
Yeah.
You know, Avery Atkins having 2 kickoffs that didn't make it to the end zone, you know, how much was that him just being in a different headspace because he was facing his hometown, Auburn?
You're right. Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. Through it all, you can talk about all this stuff, but it's the big picture of recruiting is always tied into this game. How many recruits are out there that LSU still wants that they're fighting Bama for?
Well, I think Zach Evans, the running back, is probably the biggie. Marcus Dumervil, the offensive lineman, is on their board, but I think that's LSU. I think I have him as a probable LSU. And, you know, I think that's probably really it as far as at the end here. I mean, Phillip Webb's out there. He's listing Alabama and LSU. But, I mean, LSU's got 24 commitments. And when you start at Jacoby and Guillory, well, he's 25. A couple more offensive linemen, Doomerville, and whether it's Xavier Hill from Mississippi or Tykes Crawford from Carthage, Texas, you know, the battles that are there are really done. You know, certainly Kayshawn Boutte and Rakeem Jarrett going to visit Alabama officially a couple of weeks ago got everybody a little worried, but I think those guys are both firm to LSU. So, but, you know, I they've come into Louisiana this year and gotten Kyle Edwards from Destrehan, the running back, but LSU didn't offer him. So,
right, right. You got an early prediction for me?
You know, I'm picking LSU, but I don't have a score yet. I'm starting to think LSU breaks through, that they finally end this thing. And but, you know, it's one of those deals where I talk to a lot of LSU people, and it's like, if you don't beat them this year, when are you going to get them?
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
I mean, you got the once-in-a-lifetime quarterback, Heisman Trophy candidate. They've got four freshmen on defense. You're ranked number one. You know, this is the time to get it
done.
Now
win. Yep. Yeah. Mike, thank you so much, buddy. I know you're busy. Get off to your next extravaganza, but it's always fun talking to you. And TigerBait.com has all the input prior to the game and during the game and after the game. Thank you, my friend.
All right, Jordy. Thank you.
All right. Don't forget about our LSU ticket giveaway. The Tigers are the number one team in the country. 103.7 The Game wants you to be a part of their march to a possible national championship. We're giving you a chance to win tickets to the final two games inside Death Valley. You can score a pair of tickets to the November 23rd game against Arkansas or the November 30th game against the Texas A&M Aggies. We're giving them both away through the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse. So you choose your game. Enter to win at 1037thegame.com and cheer on the Tigers to a victory in person. Nothing like a Saturday in Death Valley. Go Tigers. We'll go behind enemy lines to Brett Hudson of the Tuscaloosa News next.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Time to go up to Tuscaloosa. Let's go behind enemy lines and find out what's going on with the Crimson Tide leading up to this big matchup in Tuscaloosa at Bryant-Denny Stadium Saturday at 2:30. Brett Hudson covers the Crimson Tide for the Tuscaloosa News, and he's kind enough to join us today. Happy Tuesday to you, Brett. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are y'all?
Good. You know, I mean, it's just another game, but the president's coming, so gee whiz, not too bad. Man, what's going on up there?
Well, it's not too bad for the significance of the game. It is bad for me trying to get through security into the stadium, but I'm sure all of your listeners are seriously concerned about my security protocol for entering the stadium on that day. No, it's
let's get down to the
do what?
Go ahead.
Yeah,
finish up.
It's different having the LSU Alabama game have this kind of hype and vibe to it, because it's been a while since this game has required this much attention, just because it's felt like LSU hasn't had what it's taken to beat Bama for a good 4 years now, at least, mm-hmm. and in my opinion, anyway. So to have this kind of attention paid to an Alabama-LSU game is kind of nice, just because I was a student here at Bama from 2010 to 2013. So I was here for the game of the century. I was here for the game after that, and that was a pretty bright spot in the history of this rivalry. So it's nice to see it reach that level once again.
101,821 will be jam-packed into the stadium. So let's get the big elephant out of the room, pardon the pun. What have you seen from Tua? What are you hearing? I know Nick says it's a game-time decision. What's your gut telling you?
I just find it hard to believe that he doesn't play in this game. I mean, this is I was saying this to a coworker earlier. All of this is going more or less exactly how I thought it would. I thought they would get him into practice a little bit, very limited fashion, towards the end of the open week. That is exactly what happened. I thought his practice workload would increase throughout the course of the week as long as his ankle and his body reacts to it well and holds up to it well. His practice workload would increase over the course of this LSU week to the point that, and this is where I'm just guessing, he'll probably be somewhere in that 80 to 90% range by the time the LSU game comes. It could be more than that. It could be less than that. That's just a complete guess on my part. But it's all going exactly the way I thought it would, in that you can kind of find ways to limit the workload on his body but still have him mentally prepared to play in this game. There are a lot of ways that, that coaches can do that. And when they happened to bring him back into some practice on Thursday of last week, when they start working on LSU stuff, that's not an accident by any stretch of the imagination. And I think Tua, I anticipate Tua will have all of the game plan for this. So as long as his ankle reacts well to running around and dropping back a little bit throughout the course of the week, I don't see any reason why Tua won't start this game and in theory play every snap.
You mentioned running around. Brett Hudson of the Tuscaloosa News. Part of what makes him really good is his escapability and his ability to move the chains by running with the football. I wonder if Steve Sarkisian and Nick Saban have said, look, let's limit that as much as we possibly can and just have him sit in the pocket and get rid of the football quickly.
Well, if that has to be the case, then I think Alabama has it within their offense to handle that, because there is so much RPO quick game in this scheme right now, and it just makes sense with all the speed at wide receiver they have. It would make sense to get those guys just an inch of separation and let them turn it into a mile. I mean, we've seen countless slants turned into 75-yard touchdowns this year for Alabama, so it makes sense to have those kinds of things prominently featured in your offense. So there are ways for Alabama to generate explosive plays without putting Tua at risk, perchance, just because the offensive line is improving week over week. They can give him the 1.5 seconds he needs to hit a Henry Ruggs III on a slant. So if LSU has the defensive backs to match up to that, I'm not saying they do, I'm not saying they don't. If LSU has the defensive backs to match up to that, then that could create some issues for Alabama's offense if Bama is kind of concerned with Tua's mobility and escapability. But at the same time, this offensive line has improved week over week, specifically when they got Deontay Brown back from his four-game suspension. They put him in the starting lineup for good in that game against Texas A&M. He started the last three, and that unit they've got together has gelled really well, and their performance has gotten better week over week. So I think it's possible that Alabama's offensive line is performing up to a level that they can protect Tua if his mobility is limited. But that's probably the matchup that's going to decide this game, in my opinion. If LSU can pressure Tua, then I think LSU has a better shot than the spread of this game would suggest. But if they can't generate pressure on Tua, I just don't see a path to LSU winning this game.
Brett Hudson, the Tuscaloosa News. Is there an area of Alabama's football team, undefeated as well, that concerns you in a game like this?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably the inside linebackers. They're resorting to freshmen there, Shane Lee and Christian Harris, mostly due to a couple of preseason injuries to veteran Dylan Moses and Joshua McMillan. That's probably it. You can do some things to expose them and put them in bad situations, particularly with some run stuff and with Joe Burrow also being a mobile threat as a quarterback. You can kind of expose them and do some different things with them, put them in less than advantageous situations. But Bama's kind of scheming their way around that. They've been using a little more 2-4-5 stuff where they've got two outside linebackers on the field at the same time, and that just so happens to be the strength of his defense, in my opinion, with Terrell Lewis and Anthony Jennings playing as well as they are right now. And they've got a reserve linebacker, Markell Benton, who's been on the field in some pass packages, some dime stuff out of him. So you're starting to see them attempt to limit the amount of things that those freshman inside linebackers have to prepare for. And you've seen their performance improve over the weeks when that's been the case, but that's also in the last two games been against Tennessee and Arkansas. They haven't seen anything as excellent and as complex as what LSU is going to throw at them. So that's an interesting challenge for them. So if there is one weakness that LSU can exploit to, in theory, win this game, it's probably finding a way to get those inside linebackers in places they're not supposed to be and score enough points that way.
Brent Hudson, the Tuscaloosa News. What's the fan base do when y'all trot the field goal kicker out? Do they start praying? Do they hold their breath? Or do they have confidence in him?
Some combination of it all. And, you know, I don't think it really matters that Joseph Bulovic, who has been replacing the injured Will Reichard recently, has made his last two field goals and kicked pretty well as a kickoff guy as well against Arkansas. I believe it doesn't really matter. This Bama kicker curse has been going back for quite a long time, and I don't know that anything is going to solve it for the rest of this year, even though Bulovic has performed pretty well and Reichard is a highly touted prospect for when he eventually gets healthy and is able to perform at his highest caliber. Although Ty Perrine, the walk-on freshman punter, has made himself quite a popular figure with the way he's been punting the ball recently. So they seem to have punting figured out. But if this game comes down to a field goal of some kind, I don't think there's anything that can sway the Alabama fan anxiety in that situation.
Brett Hudson of the Tuscaloosa News. Bama's lost a lot of players from injury. How are they now with the players that have replaced those injured? What's their health status coming into the game?
Yeah, they had a lot of minor nagging things after the Arkansas game. Most of that is pretty much taken care of, Tua being the one question mark. But if you run through that injury list, running back Najee Harris is expected to be fine. Wide receiver Devontae Smith is supposed to be fine. Jared Maiden is supposed to be fine at safety. Shaheen Carter is also supposed to be fine. It's a lot of minor things like that, but they don't anticipate any issues to linger into this game. The one exception, well, there's two exceptions to that. One is Tua, who is a quote-unquote game-time decision, if you choose to believe that. I don't, but you can choose to believe that if you want to. And the other is the tight end, Miller Forrestall, who has an injured voice box, which is apparently a thing you can injure. I didn't know that until it happened, but he's going to be out for the rest of the regular season in the SEC championship game. He got hit in the throat in the Arkansas game or something. But so tight end usage might be an interesting factor for Alabama's offense in this game, but at that point, you're way in the weeds. Tight ends aren't going to decide this game. I don't think it's going to be the players that both of these teams have made their living on for the entire season.
It's going to be fun seeing two quarterbacks that, in all likelihood, will be invited to New York City for a pretty significant trophy and a set of wide receivers that I would put up against anybody in the country from any other school in what LSU and Alabama put out there on the field. It's not your old LSU-Alabama game by any stretch of the imagination.
No, and I'm working on a story on that subject for later in the week. Your listeners know the numbers this LSU offense is putting up are pretty ridiculous, especially when you compare them to school history. It's clearly unlike anything Baton Rouge has ever seen before. And I think this Alabama offense is kind of a coup de grace of Nick Saban's offensive evolution. I think people will remember when this dynasty was beginning to take form around the turn of this current decade that is going to end here in a couple of months. It was very much too tight, single back or I form, right, just running the ball downhill type stuff. And if you were just for fun, I turned on a 2008 game. This was probably back in the preseason. It's unrecognizable what Alabama was doing then to what Alabama's doing now. It looks like they've changed coaches twice since then, but they haven't. It's the same dude, just running a completely different offense. And this system is very much the coup de grace when you recruit arguably the best quarterback in that recruiting class, and you continue to bring excellent wide receivers here. You get yourself to a point where you can run a system like this as well as anybody in the country can. And I think it's the result that's been many years coming. And once LSU finally got with the times of modern offense, they can finally do something like this. So I'm looking forward to it, because like I said earlier, I was here when 9-6 happened, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing the opposite end of that session. Maybe 49-46. That'd be fun.
I was there as well, my friend. Thank you, Brett, very, very much. Continued good works there at the Tuscaloosa News, and we thank you. Anything we can do for you, just let us know.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, you're welcome. Brett Hudson of the Tuscaloosa News. We'll take a timeout. We'll shift gears. Just as hated in South Louisiana is the Saints' disdain for the Atlanta Falcons. It's Dirty Bird Week. We'll talk to Bob Rose next here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Hey, we welcome you back. National Hate Week begins as the Saints and the Falcons gear up for their 100th regular season meeting. And it doesn't seem to have the same luster, but maybe Bob Rose of the Canal Street Chronicles can fill us in on this after a bye week. Bob, good afternoon. Does this game still have a little zing to it to you?
Oh, Jordy, thanks for having me, and you better believe it does. The hate will never, ever die between these teams, these franchises, their front offices, and especially the fan base. This is Hatfield versus McCoy's, Coke versus Pepsi, Darth versus Luke. It's as bitter as and intense as you can get, and you can throw records out the window. This is going to be an intense battle and a very emotional fight on the field from gun to gun on Sunday.
They've never played anyone in the league more than they've played the Falcons. In addition to the 99 regular season meetings, they also met once in the playoffs. And the Falcons hold a series lead in this thing. What's the status on Matt Ryan?
We're still kind of waiting to hear. I personally expect him back on the field. You would think that by this week, or this point in the week, and with the way that their season is going, if they were going to shut him down for the rest of the season, they already would have done so, or probably announced it within the last day or so. Very similar to what the Carolina Panthers' decision with Cam Newton was earlier today, when they placed him on injured reserve. Again, mathematically, the Falcons certainly aren't out of it, although they would need to go on one heck of a run over the last half of the season to put themselves in any kind of playoff positioning at all. I think for them, if I were a betting man, they're going to roll Matt Ryan out there in an attempt to beat the Saints, because, again, nothing, and we've seen it on both sides over both franchise histories, nothing would please them more than to play a little bit of a spoiler to their most hated rivals. And to be able to beat New Orleans, you would certainly think that their best chances with Matt Ryan on the field, even an 80% Matt Ryan compared to their backup Matt Schaub. So I expect Matty Ice to be out there on Sunday.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, the Falcons coming off a bye week. Dan Quinn said, I got to do something. So he shook up his coaching staff. Since they were riding a six-game losing streak, they've lost 12 of 16 since week 9 of last year. What's happened to this franchise?
They've drafted poorly. They've drafted extremely poorly, paid next to zero attention to either one of the lines, either offensive or defensive. And you especially see the result of that on the offensive line. They've had offensive line issues for the past couple of years, but yeah, over this stretch that you just rolled down, they can't protect Matt Ryan. They can't open up holes for two very good running backs. They're just getting no push at the point of attack, and they're getting beat up in the trenches on both sides of the ball. It has to start there, because you look at the Falcons roster, and skill position wise and speed and athleticism wise, they can match up with anybody in the league. But, you know, as you and I have talked about seemingly every week this season, the New Orleans Saints, for example, are beating teams up and beating them in the trenches. Yeah, they have the athletes to match up with anybody, but they're beating them on a fundamental level and just bullying people around. And the Falcons can't match up with a physical game, and that has been their problem. The book has been out on them for well over a year now. It's just you beat on them and you physically wear them down, and they're going to fold. And we've seen exactly that almost every week.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. The Carolina Panthers have placed Cam Newton on injured reserve. He's done for the year. You have to play them again. You got to play Tampa Bay a couple times. This is the first of two meetings with the Falcons. This back end of the season really sets up quite well for the Saints if they stay healthy, if they stay focused, and if they play their game.
Yeah, you're certainly right, and especially the month of November. I'm actually working on a piece on SI.com now highlighting exactly that. The Saints are traditionally strong under Sean Payton and Drew Brees coming out of a bye week, and they are traditionally strong in the month of November, especially at home. And this month, they have four games, obviously starting with the Falcons, but all four games are against divisional rivals. So if history is indeed on their side, the Saints can definitely put a stranglehold on this division. I think they play Atlanta twice this month. They book in them at the beginning of end of the month, and they have Tampa and Carolina sandwiched in between. And Carolina, like you pointed out, they're playing pretty well without Cam Newton in at quarterback. Kyle Allen has surprised a lot of observers, and Christian McCaffrey is among the MVP candidates for the league, no doubt. But the Saints already have a two-game lead on them. And basically, if they can just hold serve and stay healthy, like you pointed out, all big ifs, certainly in the NFL, they always are. But we expect Alvin Kamara and Jared Cook to be back on the field for New Orleans. Drew Brees, we've already seen him back in the lineup healthy, and he's gotten an extra 2 weeks of rest now. So the Saints are as healthy as I can remember them being as they head into the playoff stretch of the season.
And if they do, like you say, and are very effective in November, that December the 8th matchup when they host the San Francisco 49ers could possibly be for the number one seed in the NFC. Lots to look forward to.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, for older Saints fans, the mere mention of the San Francisco 49ers sends the shudder up all of our spines. But the NFL, the NFL is a slightly better place when the San Francisco 49ers are relevant. And, you know, when you compare the two schedules, the Saints and the 49ers.
I can't thank you enough, buddy. We're up against the clock, Bob. I can't thank you enough. We'll talk again next week. Enjoy the ball game, all right?
Oh, for sure. Thank you for having me, as always.
All right, buddy. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, SI.com, and many, many other things. Hour number one in the books. Stick around. Busy hour number two coming your way here on the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown,
streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 103.7 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour two of two, and away we go on this Tuesday, the fifth day of November. According to Sports Illustrated, President Donald Trump plans to attend Saturday's football game between number one LSU and number two Alabama. Speaking to The Advocate, LSU quarterback gave his opinion on the president coming to watch the two undefeated teams square off in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And aren't you proud he's our quarterback? He said, quote, regardless of political views, that's pretty cool having the president at the game. It doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. Having the president at the game is pretty cool. Joe Burrow, you are the man. Without further ado, we do it every day to start off hour number two. We take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, please, sir.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, I think it costs about $1,200 a pop. So if you want to buy your ticket, I'll buy mine, and we'll just drive up there and go to the game. You ready?
I'll pass Jordy on this one, because trust me, we'd be lucky to get into, especially with my beard, Jordy, I'd probably wind up getting detained somehow, some way.
Yeah, on second thought, I'm not hanging anywhere near you on second thought. No.
I'll gladly pass on that one, Jordy, at least for this go-round. Especially with, again, something as the president's there, I feel like that's just going to be a whole other ordeal. A lot like what we heard from our guy Brett Hudson in the last hour. But, Jordy, we got to kind of start things off with definitely what's causing all this in the world of sports. And that is the Los Angeles Chargers, the rumor and innuendo going around that they are one of those teams that could be jumping across the pond. Probably something Goodell's been wanting for a long, long time. But the Chargers have since kind of denounced the rumor, saying it's complete and utter BS, Jordy. How ridiculous would that be to have an NFL franchise in Europe?
That would be... I can't even fathom that, to be quite honest with you. Nothing against London. It's a beautiful city, great people, but the biggest mistake they ever made was to leave San Diego. That was the biggest... that was ridiculous. If I'm the owner, I'd get back on my hands and knees and say, We'll come back, please. We'll build our own stadium. We'll do whatever it takes. But we need you guys, because nobody goes to watch the Chargers. Nobody.
Nobody does, Jordy. And, you know, again, it's kind of – they buried themselves when you just look at the whole story of what happened with the San Diego Chargers and the city of San Diego kind of saying bye-bye because, you know, they wanted this new stadium. And basically the city of San Diego said, nope, we're not paying – for this multi-million, billion-dollar thing and putting that together, right, Jordy. So it's definitely well-deserved kind of retribution for Los Angeles, saying, hey, we're going to stick around, but then next thing you know, they'll be over across the pond and maybe send over the New York Jets, too, while you're at it, since nobody wants to see them play in the States.
I'm telling you, San Antonio is going to put up a bid for somebody. They're going to do it, and they got the arena. They got the stadium already there. Somebody's going to want it, and that's a huge, huge market, huge area. But anyway, the Chargers blew it. They should never have left San Diego. Greed got in the way. So I have no sympathy for them whatsoever.
No sympathy for them at all. I like that a lot, Jordy. And now we got to kind of flip it over to stuff on the field, and that is Cam Newton headed to the IR, definitely one of the big headlines coming out of Tuesday. And it's just amazing to see that Kyle Allen now is given the full reins for the rest of the year. My question to you, Jordy, is this. Is Cam Newton done?
I was going to say that might be his – he may have played his last game as a Carolina Panther.
It well, I was saying period, Jordy.
Oh, done completely.
Yeah.
Might be. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see on that one. But I still like our chances, the Saints' chances against Kyle Allen twice as the Saints have to play them. So I'm Saints have a chance to get a stranglehold on this division if they take care of the month of November, like Bob Rose had mentioned earlier. If they can do that, they can do that, and that sets up San Francisco on the 8th or 9th of December for number one seed in the NFC. Can't wait.
I can't wait either. The month of November is going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, we talked about it all the way back whenever the schedule was released, Jordy. This may be the saltiest month for sports fans in Louisiana because you've got LSU, Alabama, you got LSU, Texas A&M at the end of the month. You got the Falcons, Saints being bookended. Then you have the return of AD the night before Thanksgiving. Jordy, it is just a salty month.
Yeah, it's good. And don't forget the Cajuns and the job that Napier's doing there. Bob Marlin's crew gets underway tonight. Will Wade's crew gets underway on Friday. We got a great doubleheader of college basketball, Kansas versus Duke, Michigan State versus Kentucky. My goodness gracious, our cup runneth over.
So needless to say, you'll be glued in tonight whenever you see those two top four teams in college basketball square off to open up the season.
Yeah, don't be calling me because I'm not answering. And I'm not going to Tuscaloosa with you, you bearded whatever you are. Sheesh. Scaring me.
Good point there, Jordy. Good point indeed. But, you know, it got me thinking, you know, we talk about the Champions Classic that's going on tonight. Shouldn't that start every single year of the college basketball season? You have your top four teams, regardless of who they are, square off?
Absolutely, and they've done a really good job of doing that for the most part, and they hold it in the Mecca at Madison Square Garden. It's a great way. College football does the same thing for the most part with their, you know, to start the season off. They get a headline marquee matchup. College basketball does it as well as anything. I'm just hoping fans will congregate and watch the regular season instead of waiting till March to tune into college basketball. But good stuff, man. Lots of great, talented athletes, and we got foot. It's just a great time. Like you said, November is terrific in sports around here in particular. It's terrific.
It's just so much fun. And, you know, Jordy, one last thing before we get out of here, I got to bring it up, is what's going on with Florida State. Rumors came out late last night that have since been confirmed to be false. Big game Bob Stoops could be coming back to college football with Florida State. Thankfully, that thing was since kind of squashed, especially thanks the XFL is thanking their lucky stars that their biggest name is sticking with that company. And now we're going to wind up trying to figure out who's going to be the next guy with Florida State. So early thoughts of who it could be in your mind.
Oh, man, I don't have a clue. Maybe that coach at Iowa State, he's pretty good. I know they tried to get Bob's brother, Mark. Apparently, he's not that interested. Gus Malzahn might be a wild card. I don't know. I don't know. But don't be saying Joe Brady. He's not ready to be a head coach. He hadn't even been a coordinator yet. There's your Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Do yourself a flavor. Get some Cajun Chef hot sauce. Everything tastes better with it. Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, on the game between the Tide and the Tigers. Next. And we welcome you back. We're going to let it ride. It's the Game of the Century Part 2, the mega game, whatever you want to call it. Saturday, of course, in Tuscaloosa. 2:30 kickoff Central Time on CBS. And it wouldn't be fair if we didn't get Mr. College Football's thoughts on this game. And so we welcome in Tony Barnhart once again to join us. And Tony, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jordy. I'll apologize in advance. There's a little background noise here. I'm in the airport trying to get on a plane here in about 40 minutes. So please excuse the noise.
We completely understand it. So this is kind of a microcosm of how the game of college football has evolved and changed. I don't think we're going to see a 9-6 rock'em sock'em robot game like we did between these two back when the circumstances were very similar back in 2011.
No, a lot has changed, and now we're talking about two offenses that are both ranked in the top 8 or 9, two quarterbacks that are both ranked in the top four. You know, averaging 46 and 48 points a game. It's been an incredible thing to watch, and it's going to be completely different. I am anxious to see does it turn into a low scoring game, and man, it's going to be a wild scene.
Yeah, I guess the biggest question mark here is the health status of Tua. Tagovailoa, anybody that has surgery, I don't think anybody could possibly be 100%, but 85% Tua is still pretty darn good.
Well, it is, and the issue, there's a couple of issues involved. One is that this one, we were told, this injury is not as severe as the one he had last year. So that's, in terms of recovery, that helps. And the other thing, it last year was his left ankle. Well, this one's his right ankle. Why is that important? Because his left ankle last year, that's the ankle he pushes off on to throw the ball. So that won't be the case there. Nick Saban told reporters this week, it's pretty simple. He's going to go through practice, and the better he does, the more reps he'll get. And if he doesn't have a setback, I think everybody expects him to play. And you're right, Jordy. If he's 85%, that's pretty good.
Does it affect his influence of running the football? Because he's pretty good at that when all else fails.
That's a really good question, and it's very important because it's not only his ability to move around and extend plays, which is a very important part of this game. It's his ability to move around and protect himself. And that's important. You'll recall in the SEC championship game, mm-hmm. he took some pretty good shots in that game against Georgia because he just simply couldn't move as well. And finally, of course, had to give way to Jalen Hurts. That's the biggest concern, is whether or not he can move well enough to protect himself. Because if he has an opportunity to throw it, nobody throws it better. But that will be a big thing to watch on Saturday.
I guess they ought to have Ric Flair in this thing, because his old saying of to be the man, you got to beat the man.
Have you ever seen
a faction of fans more obsessed with beating a coach than LSU fans are with trying to beat the guy that brought them from the Stone Ages, that brought them into the light, that won them a national championship? And then a year later left, goes to the NFL, then goes to Tuscaloosa, and has completely dominated them since.
It's been an amazing thing to watch. But, you know, when Ed Orgeron got the job, he knew what the standard was. He was beating Alabama. And the fact that LSU has now lost 8 straight to Alabama, dating back to that very bad memory at the Sugar Bowl in the 2011 season. Yeah, the LSU fans want this one. They want it really, really bad. But remember this, Jordy. Alabama's won 48 of their last 49 games at home. They are tough in Brian Denny.
Yeah. I know this is blasphemous, but the first college football playoff selection will be announced later on this evening. Don't hate me, LSU fans, but could a loss Saturday actually be a good thing?
Well, it could be. It absolutely could be, because I think when the rankings are released tonight, I think LSU and Ohio State will be 1-2 or 2-1. Those will be the top two teams. 3-4 will be Alabama and Clemson. Don't know particularly the order, but yeah, LSU is in a situation now that if they were to lose to Alabama, but it's a close game, and they finish 11-1, they would have to get consideration as an at-large team, the way Alabama did in 2017. Now, it really LSU has a much more compelling case with one loss than Alabama does, because LSU has played at Texas. They have beaten Florida. They have beaten Auburn. The resume is much better. The only issue is that what if the committee's choices are for the 4th spot, or an 11-1 LSU with one loss against Alabama, a 12-1 Oklahoma Big 12 champ, a 12-1 Oregon Pac-12 champ. How does that all shake out? Mm-hmm. I know how people in our part of the world feel about it,
yeah.
but I don't know how the committee, I don't know how the committee would feel about it.
We're talking with Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, LSU, Alabama, this coming Saturday in Bryant-Denny Stadium. As you said, they've won a whole bunch of games, 48 of their last 49 there. It's a tough place to play, tough team to beat anywhere. But you know what? I just thought about this. For the first time in many, many, many a year, Nick Saban's actually going to have to do some homework and some coaching for this game, because back when Les Miles was, it was just a cookie cutter. They're going to run it, and then if they don't score, they're going to kick it, and they're not going to score on us. But now with LSU in this offense, he's got to do some digging and some studying.
There's no doubt, and this is not a vintage Alabama defense. Okay, they're very, very young. And they've been able to outscore people because of it. Just go back and look at the scores. But here's the game that sets – here's the thing that sets this game apart, Jordy. I believe, having done some research last mm-hmm. night and a column that I'm going to write for later on, I believe this is the best quarterback matchup in the history of the LSU-Alabama game. Think about it. Think about what Joe Burrow and what Tua Tagovailoa have done. Think about the fact that we expect them both to be in New York for the Heisman Trophy. They're among the top four or five passers in the country. So each side has had great quarterbacks, but I don't think we've ever had this kind of talent at the quarterback position from both teams in the same game.
Last time they played with this at stake back in 2011 in Tuscaloosa, the game that LSU won 9-6, 31 of those players went on to play in the NFL. 31. There's a reason why these teams are good. They've got talent across the board. I know it's tough to win there, but do you feel – is this a golden opportunity for – is this their best chance to turn this thing around?
Well, I think it is because, LSU has always had talent. But they haven't gone to Tuscaloosa with an elite quarterback, okay? With a guy like Joe Burrow, who is absolutely fearless. That, you know, he's going to walk out there and the place is going to be going nuts and it's going to be loud and he's going to say, okay, let's go. Here we go. This guy is a tremendous leader, one of the best leaders I've ever come across in my time of doing it. And LSU has a chance because they've got great talent as they always do and they've got Joe Burrow.
And for the first time, maybe I'm wrong here, but for the first time, and you said it, they're young. It's not the same type of Alabama team. Now, they're dangerous. They've got great receivers. They've got a great quarterback. But that defense has been their trademark. And they're tough as nails. I just don't sense that anymore. And it seems to me that little Clyde Edwards-Helaire could be a huge factor in this game from a running back perspective.
Oh, I think he will be. I think he will be because you got to gear your defense. If you're Alabama, you got to gear to not let Joe Burrow just pick you apart and things down the field. And you saw it early on when Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been running the ball more. He ran it against Auburn. And I wrote a comment. I said, look, if LSU's going to start running the ball and play defense, I'm not sure that's fair because of everything else they've got going for them. So, I think Clyde Helaire will be a big part of this football game.
And for the first time, I can say I believe, honestly, that Nick Saban's on a different level from anybody else. I agree with that. But the coordinators at LSU and the freedom that Ed Orgeron has given them, I'm telling you, I'll put them up against anybody.
Well, they've done a tremendous job. I mean, it was a decision that Coach O had to make. I'm sure he looked at that stat sheet last year, and it was 29-0. And he said, you know what? We played great defense to hold these guys 29 points. But we couldn't – we're going to have to do something much more radical if we're going to beat them and win a division championship. So credit Coach O and credit Joe Brady for coming in, and credit Steve Ensminger for working with Joe Brady and figuring out the best thing to do for LSU.
And I got to tip my hat to Saban. He's got his coordinators come and go quicker than the weather changes. in certain parts of the world, and yet he's still right there at the top. So he is tremendous. Tony Barnhart, Mr. College Football, before you catch your plane, what is the key for LSU, in your opinion, to pull off this monumental task and beat Alabama at Bryant-Denny?
The teams that beat Alabama do a couple of things. One, they have a hot quarterback who is fearless. Well, LSU's got that. But number two, they forced Alabama to turn the ball over. Go back and look at the last time they lost at Bryant-Denny against Ole Miss. Alabama had five turnovers in that game and still only lost by a touchdown. That's the key. You got to have a hot quarterback, and you got to make Alabama turn the ball over.
Oh, can't wait, man. I can't believe I'm talking about Alabama and LSU with great quarterbacks and great wide receivers. But we're going to see what happens. So enjoy it, my friend. Have a safe flight. Always great talking with you. And we'll catch up sooner than later. Thank you, my friend.
All right, Jordy. Take care.
That's Tony Barnhart. Big influencing factor in the SEC for years and years and years. Speaking of the SEC, believe it or not, we've got college basketball beginning tonight. And LSU opens up on Friday. Blake Lavelle is our new member of our college basketball force. And he'll give us his thoughts as we preview this college basketball season. And that's going to be brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. You know, they're the best. Peterbilt is the best for a reason. And they've been that way ever since they got involved. Because they're the class of the industry. They concentrate on delivering high performance, low maintenance, and extremely durable vehicles that pay off in low operating costs, driver productivity, and high resale value. They are the premium quality heavy-duty truck manufacturer ever since the company was founded back in 1939. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. And Peterbilt of Louisiana is in Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. Peterbilt of Louisiana. And when the Tigers travel their equipment to Tuscaloosa for the big game, they get there via a Peterbilt truck. College basketball talk next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, you heard the sound. That means it's college basketball season. And boy, we've got a doubleheader up in New York City. What a matchup of games. And so I thought, let's get one of our, let's get an expert. And boy, I tell you what, this guy is in the know when it comes to college basketball. Blake Lavelle is covers the SEC and college basketball for Clutch Points. He's a writer for Blue Ribbon's College Basketball Yearbook, which is the gold standard. He writes for Athlon Sports. He has a podcast, Marching to Madness, and much, much more. Blake, let's tip it up, and let's get to the Final Four right now. How are you, sir?
That's right, Jordy. Yes, let's do it. We've all been waiting for this for a while, haven't we? We say it every year. It seems like the season sneaks up on us, but obviously we're excited that it's here.
How about college basketball starting off? Michigan State and Kentucky, one of the two, one of the doubleheader games coming up, and we focus on the SEC. And for years we always said it was Kentucky and everybody else. Are we saying that again?
Well, I think this year it's probably more of a Kentucky and Florida, and then maybe the rest of the pack's a little bit behind those teams. I think Florida can be just as good as Kentucky. I really believe they're a preseason top five type of team. When you just consider all the talent on that roster, when they add someone like Kerry Blackshear, who will be one of the best players in the SEC. I mean, he's probably the preseason SEC player of the year in a lot of people's minds. So Florida and Kentucky are right there, I believe, at 1 and 2. And, you know, you look at that group behind them, I think that's what's going to be the most fascinating thing about SEC basketball this year is that group of LSU, of Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, teams like that. You know, are those teams capable of winning multiple games in the NCAA tournament? I think a lot of people would tell you that they are. But what order are they going to finish in? That's what we don't know, and that's what's going to make it exciting.
LSU, of course, near and dear to our hearts in this part of the world, lost Tremont Waters. They lost Nasri, and they lost Cavell Bigby-Williams. That's a rim protector, and that's a dynamic guard and a skilled big man. Where do you see LSU as this season unfolds?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because they certainly have the talent. You know, guys like Emmett Williams and Darius Days, you're really going to see them, I think, break out this year. We know kind of what their talent is. Certainly, like Skylar Mays, Javonte Smart, we know what they've been capable of doing, and they'll expand their roles now, certainly even further. The couple things that I always look at, especially in this scenario, is you lose a point guard that was probably, for my money, one of the best playmakers just in the country, period. Mm-hmm. I think Tremont Waters was just a special player. He made everybody else better. Just his ability to make plays in key situations, that's not an easy thing to replace. So when you look at that aspect of it, how does everything flow on offense without him? They have so many talented players, but you got to have kind of that one guy that can drive everything, and that's what you look at with this team. And then the rebounding, you said it. I mean, they're going to be a little bit smaller. And, you know, Trendon Wofford's going to have to rebound. Emmett Williams is going to have to rebound. Darius Days, all these guys, they've got to be able to be consistent rebounders. If they can do that, I think LSU is probably the third best team in the SEC, to be honest with you. But if they can't answer some of those questions, you could see them maybe fall into the middle of that pack.
Middle of the pack in the SEC, is this another strong year in the league where there are five, six, even more bids to the NCAA tournament? Is it that strong and that deep?
Yeah, I think it's probably another year where we see six or seven. I'd be surprised with anything less than six, really. When you just consider the depth in this league just as good as it's been in a while, and we all kind of look at it, you know, there's so many good players. What I've told people is, you know, whereas last year you had maybe five teams you felt like were legitimate, surefire, Sweet 16 type of teams. Now, of course, Mississippi State got upset in the first round. They may have been one of those teams you put in that group. But with, like, you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, you know, they didn't go maybe as far as they should have, but Auburn did what they did. I think this year you're kind of seeing maybe a situation where, let's say, six or seven teams get in, but you don't necessarily know for sure just yet if you're going to have those five surefire teams that you feel like are Sweet 16 and beyond type of teams. They're going to be good teams, but they have to answer some of these questions we have about them before we're going to put them maybe in that Kentucky-Florida territory of teams, or you'd be disappointed if anything less than probably a Sweet 16 run from those two teams.
Blake Lavelle, kind enough to join us. Are we going to see a return to form from Arkansas? I'm a big believer in Coach Musselman. I know from his brief stint when he was at LSU and then the job he did at Nevada, now he takes over the calling of the Hogs. Are we going to see an improved team in Arkansas?
Yeah, I'm a big Coach Musk guy, and I'm someone who, I mean, as you probably look at him, you just feel like he was going to get a job like this sooner rather than later based on what he's doing there at Nevada. And now you bring him here to Arkansas, which I think is a pretty good fit for him. I mean, he's someone that certainly is probably going to energize that fan base. He already has. And the good news for him is that he's got one of the best guard groups in the SEC going into this year. So he's got talent to work with right away. Just like with LSU, though, and this is going to be more to an extreme with Arkansas, they're not big. I mean, their biggest rotation player is going to be 6'8", and there's going to be a lot of times where they may have no one taller than 6'6" on the floor at one time. And so how do they rebound? How do they defend at the rim? That's what we look for with Arkansas. And, again, that's what probably separates Arkansas from being a team that could potentially finish as far down as that bottom four, or they could be a team, you know, that gets into the NCAA tournament as a bubble type of team. I don't know that the depth's fully there yet that he's going to want, but they've got a guard group that can take them a lot of places if they can find a way to rebound and defend in the paint.
Two other teams with new head coaches that I know of for sure is Alabama and Texas A&M. They're both energized by their coaches and the enthusiasm involved, but do they have the talent now to go along with that to make some noise in the league?
Yeah, I feel like Nate Oates is probably of those four new coaches. He to me feels like pretty much a lock to have the best success right away because he has a Kyra Lewis who is one of the better point guards in the country, and he's someone that's going to be able to fit perfectly with what Nate Oates wants to do in terms of playing style. I mean, he played one of the fastest tempos of any team in the country when he was at Buffalo, and you figure he's going to play that same type of style in Alabama. It'll take him a little while to get everybody on the same page and get the players in there that'll fit every single spot. But he's got enough talent to work with this year to where I truly think Alabama's a team you can look at as a potential number three in the SEC type of team. They've got the depth. They've got a good freshman class. So I think Nate Oates can have a lot of success this year. With Buzz Williams, he's probably the best long-term hire because you know he's somewhere he wants to be now. I mean, he's back home in Texas. His roster isn't fully formed yet, but they're going to play hard and they're going to play defense. So that'll give him an opportunity to win some games this year. It just may take a little while to rebuild the roster there.
Blake Lavelle, kind enough to join us. Clutch Point is Ware's involvement, one of the many things that he's involved with college basketball. I'm very curious to see what happens with the Jerry Stackhouse hire at Vanderbilt. They were 0-for in the league a year ago. There's no way but up for the Commodores.
Yeah, there's not. And it was, I think when we looked at all the hires, it was an outside-the-box hire. And I think anytime you have one of those, I think you're going to be in a situation where people are really going to be sort of down on it at the start because it's not one that fits in with the traditional hires that everyone else made. They didn't, Vanderbilt didn't go and get a successful power conference coach or the most successful mid-major coach. They went and got somebody that's never coached in college before, and that's going to bring some hesitations for people. However, I think maybe this is sort of a different scenario because no matter who Vanderbilt hired this year, Vanderbilt's not going to come out and make the NCAA tournament. It's just that they don't have the full roster they need yet to do that. And I think that's where you have someone like Stackhouse who's going to bring a toughness. He has that building sort of mindset and he has all the experience that he has. I mean, we can say he hasn't coached in college, but he's used to developing players because he was in the G League. He was very successful in the G League. We know about his background as an NBA player. He's got connections. He's got all this experience. I think he could have done a whole lot worse. And while Vanderbilt, it may not show up in terms of the win column this year, I feel pretty good about where they're headed with him. And I think he's going to get some players in there, and they'll be right back up there here in a couple of years.
Blake Lavelle, kind enough to join us. College basketball gets underway with a bang tonight. So let's talk about Michigan State and Kentucky. The other one, of course, is Kansas and Duke. Everybody's got Michigan State number one. They've got that guard Cassius, who's pretty darn good. How do you see that game? What are you looking forward to seeing out of that?
I always say, I tell people this, it's like when you get four teams this good going up against each other, it's like I just flip a coin because these guys are so good. And especially in game one, which I know we can laugh about and go back to that Duke and Kentucky game last year, where the range of outcomes is so very unique, and it's really hard to predict. But certainly Cassius Winston is one of the best players in the country, and I think he's probably the difference in a game like this, especially to open the season against a team in Kentucky where we say this every year, where for me it's all about, how does the chemistry come together, because it's virtually a new team every year. Now, they do bring back four really good players, and that's a positive for John Calipari this year, because he does have, two good guards and two good post guys that he's bringing back that are sophomores. So they're the older statesmen of the group. But he does have guys who are familiar, and that'll help them a little bit. But how that chemistry comes together, can they shoot it from outside? Those are seemingly the questions we always have with Kentucky. They've got to get good offensive productions, out of their big guys like Nick Richards and E.J. Montgomery. If they can do that, they're going to be fine. But I do think Michigan State's probably a little further ahead at this point and should be able to win a game like this.
Yeah. I've always said about Cal, he wants to win every game, but losses in November are a lot more palatable to him than losses in February, because they're a team that just seems to get better as the year goes on. Kansas and Duke. Duke loses a whole bunch of players. Kansas has a whole bunch of clouds over their program, but they're really good coaches, obviously, Hall of Famers. They always recruit well. I'm just curious as to how Kansas reacts and responds with all the quote noise going around their program.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because I do think this is just like the other one. It's a very intriguing matchup from the sense that you've got some players that are very similar to each other on both sides. And I think we're going to be looking at it, and you've seen people talk about this already. This Kentucky team, this Duke team are going to look maybe a little bit different than we're used to seeing because they may play a little bit of a different way just because of their personnel. And you know, you look at a team like Duke, where are they going to be able to shoot it well from outside and how well are they going to be able to do that? And again, knowing what they have to replace, I mean, they've done this for several years now, but that group last year, as we know, was a really unique group. And so you replace that and you're going to overhaul some things in terms of how you approach, you know, the game in and game out. And so I'm very curious to watch Duke. I feel like Kansas probably is the better team this early, but certainly you wouldn't be surprised if either one of them win this game. Mm-hmm. But it does sort of feel like Kansas is maybe in a better spot, even with all the noise around them, just because you feel like their nucleus is a little bit more proven maybe than what we've seen or what we're going to see from Duke here after losing those guys from last year.
Blake Lavelle, talking college basketball. You know, when we talk about football, everybody says the number one conference in the country is the SEC. When we talk about basketball, 9 times out of 10, they say the ACC, the Big Ten comes in pretty good as well. How do you rate the conferences? I know it's preseason right now. I know we're just getting ready to tip it off. But from what's coming back, the coaches, the recruiting aspects, give me the top three leagues in college basketball, top three conferences, rather.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to be someone that when I look at just the top part of the ACC, it's really hard for me to look anywhere else and say you feel like there's a better sort of scenario because they are. Those top four, maybe five teams are going to be so good in the ACC. You know, Louisville's a team that's probably a Final Four contender. The same with Duke, same with Virginia, same with North Carolina. So you can go up and down the line with that. So I'm always going to have a hard time picking anyone over the ACC. Now, the Big Ten, as we know, that's one where Michigan State's the preseason number one. You know Purdue's going to be pretty good, Ohio State, Maryland, those types of teams. But you do, you know, the bottom of the Big Ten has gotten better, but I think there's still some situations where you don't really know about that middle. And you can say the same thing for the bottom of the ACC. So you probably lead with those two. Now, the Big 12, I guess, I mean, the Big East is in there. And the SEC, again, from top to bottom, the SEC can match up with these other conferences now. We know that. So you're probably taking a chance on any one you pick, and there's a good chance you probably get it right because a lot of these top conferences are so good. And I'm always going to be one probably that leans on the ACC just based on how good those top teams are.
Blake Lavelle, kind enough to join us. I noticed you didn't mention the Pac-12. I mean, you think of the schools, UCLA, Arizona, how they have fallen. And what's the story in that league?
Yeah, the Pac-12 is, I'll say this, it's on the way back up. It's just a matter of how quickly does it get there. And, you know, like UCLA, I mean, I really think that Cronin will do a good job there, but it's not going to happen this year. Like, they're not going to be at a national championship type of level this year. It's not going to happen. But, you know, it is a situation where, like, Oregon and Arizona, even like a Washington, Colorado, I mean, these are teams that could be pretty good this year. These are all potential top 25 type of teams. So the Pac-12 is on the way back up. I don't know that the bottom of the league is as good or as strong as some of these other leagues we've talked about, but I do feel like that the conference is in good shape, that they've got certainly a good coaching roster there now. And when you're talking about, you know, Mark Fox is at Cal, that's a tough rebuild. But, I mean, Mark Fox has had success. He didn't have the type of success he wanted to have at Georgia, but that could be a good spot for him. So, yeah, it's a conference on the way back up. We'll be talking about the Pac-12 hear a lot more, I think, over the next couple of years, kind of maybe getting back to where they used to be.
A remarkable run by LSU a year ago, 16-2 in the league to win the SEC. Nobody saw that coming. I mean, Will Wade did a heck of a job, and then they had some circumstances there at the end. I still think that that was a team that could, with all the parts together, including the head coach, could have made an even deeper run in the tournament. But it's a new year, new team. It should be, man, let's get going. I can't wait to watch these games tonight. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, that's what we all say, right? Everybody's undefeated. Everyone's a number one seed right now. Yeah. Once the action tips off, that's when we decide, I guess, who we're going to start overreacting to. But as I always tell everyone, don't overreact to one game. I promise. It's a long season.
Please tell everybody about Clutch Points, please.
Yes, Clutch Points. It's a place where I'm writing now. I do a lot of SEC basketball stuff there. There's an app, all sorts of stuff. So you can find that. Then you mentioned the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. Contributed to that this year for the first time. Had a lot of fun doing it. Even though the season started, I'd recommend anyone to go out and buy that. Yes. It just gives you so much knowledge you can refer to when you watch these games.
It is the Bible of college basketball. It has been for a long, long time, and it keeps getting better and better. Blake, I can't thank you enough. We'd love to have you on as a contributor throughout the course of the college basketball season. So let's touch base and figure out the best days and times for you, and we'd love to have you on again.
Hey, I appreciate it, Jory. I'd love to come back on. Let me know, and, yeah, ready to get it going here.
Let's do it. All right. Thank you, Blake. College basketball begins tonight. LSU begins on Friday when they host Bowling Green Friday night. All right. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll put a finishing bow on this show with a little history lesson and a birthday wish to a guy that just needs some loving. He needs some love thrown his way. All next here on the Jordy Helpert Show. We welcome you back. Just in following up on the Blake Lavelle interview, opening night NBA rosters featured 70 players from the SEC. 26 of the 30 teams have at least one player from an SEC school on its roster. How about that? Well, from the station that keeps on giving and giving, Cirque du Soleil OVO is a family show based on the world of insects, bustling with action and full of fun and color. And 103.7 The Game has your chance to win a pair of tickets to this amazing show coming to the Cajun Dome March 25th to the 29th. Just text CIRQ, CIRQUE, to 68683 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to this amazing show. Once again, text CIRQ, CIRQUE, to 68683 for your chance to win tickets. Brought to you by 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com. History lesson on this day, November 5th. The year 1994, George Foreman, all 45 years young, knocked out previously unbeaten Michael Moorer in the 10th round to become the oldest heavyweight champion in history. On this day, brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobriggs. All the football games, regular season coming to a close. Get all your tailgating needs there. If you're traveling to Tuscaloosa, you got everything you need, plus the cleanest restrooms anywhere, and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Best cheeseburger of all time. DC's Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Brobriggs. If today, November 5th, is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a great day you share it with. Happy 27th birthday. We need to send some love to Odell Beckham Jr. His Cleveland Browns stink, and they're just having a tough go. Happy birthday, OBJ. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Keep adding year after year after year to it. Special thanks, Michael Scarborough, Brett Hudson, Bob Rose, Tony Barnhart, Blake Lavelle, Clint Domain, and to you, our great listeners, and to our sponsors that make it possible each and every day. We couldn't do it without you. Tomorrow, Chris Truex in the trenches. Michael Huguenin will share his thoughts and his prediction on LSU-Bama, and much, much more. So we only have one of these Tuesdays, November 5th. Have a great rest of your afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.